Welcome to the Jeff and Jamie feed. My name is Jamie Brown. This is Jeff Tony Dandel, and we love diving into all things food and beverage with you guys. So thanks for joining us here. And today we are really looking at food and beverage from a totally different angle.
But a very important big part of what we do.
And that's around the build outs of restaurants. We are bringing on our architect, Don Peden from Peden Fine and Architecture here in Charlotte. So we'll be getting into some of that. But Jeff, we tend to go into older buildings. You're laughing.
I'm laughing just because I know we have an awesome relationship with Don, and deep down he really loves us, but gosh, he has to hate the projects that we pick. They're so hard and such a pain.
But their team is very creative and they're able to work through a lot of things. They've had a lot of experience doing tons of different restaurant projects. And, you know, we tend to go in these old buildings. What do you feel like really draws us to that kind of space for a restaurant project?
Well, now I don't know if we know how to do it any other way. Someone came to us for some consulting on a new project they were building, and you could put walls and edges of the building anywhere. And I was like, I was at a loss. I didn't know what to do.
Oh, the doors were just so wide open.
I need,
you didn't
like,
have constraints.
Like, you have 7 square feet. What can you do with it and figure it out?
Yes. Well, older architecture has a lot of benefits. I mean, when we've gone into old spaces, a lot of times it's about, you know, you can really root yourself in a neighborhood, in a community, because that space has been there. So it feels very much already a part of it.
I feel like that's our biggest thing, is it really helps with the story. It helps us kind of, figure out what the life of that restaurant's going to be and just kind of further that and create another chapter for it rather than start over.
Yes, and we've talked before about how going into an older space is so much easier in a lot of ways because it has that inherent charm.
Yes.
You know, whereas you go into a new space, you have to bring your A game. You've got to bring everything. We think maybe we actually stink at what we do, and we're just relying on like old brick and old spaces and old stories and keeping those alive. It is such a different proposition into a new space.
If you have a 100-foot wall of old brick, then you put a fun wallpaper in the bathroom and you're like, okay, look at us.
Yeah. Wait a minute. You totally demean everything that I do.
It's a little harder than that. I know.
Well, I know. I get it. But it's tough in these old spaces, especially if you're doing the build out, the architecture for it, because it's not meant to be a restaurant. And
no,
that is the
biggest thing.
Some of the ones we go into are old enough where even things like there are HVAC issues that because the building wasn't originally intended to have like that kind of power in the building, old fireplaces and things
like
that.
Even when you get to Lieber Y and Lelia Hall, they were built before there were cars.
Right.
So, when historic is asking us about, parking lots and things like that, you're like, but that wasn't a thing. So it's just crazy.
Yes. Well, let's bring on Don. We'll kind of pick his brain about, all things build outs for restaurants and not just old spaces like ours and our projects, but also just kind of understanding how a restaurant build out works. And we'll dive in.
I love it. Let's bring him on. We have Don Peden from Peden Fine Architecture. This is one of our biggest partners. I like to call it Peden Fine and Tony Dandel Architecture sometimes because I'm there so much.
Right. You're trying to make yourself relevant. You're not getting paid for this, but Don gets paid for this.
Always pushing to change the name on the door.
I always want to get on the cup. Maybe you could just make me a cup.
We'll make you more cups this Christmas.
For Christmas. That would be great. But it just shows what a true partner you are. And how deeply embedded in everything we do is. And the fact, too, that it's not just our restaurants. You guys have done our remodel on our house, which we haven't built yet. So we don't know how that's going. But someday.
Eventually, yeah.
It'll get there. Someday. Mm-hmm. Someday. But, you really are you are the beginning of every project is going to see Don and hanging out and figuring out what we're going to do.
Yeah. What's the new big thing What's the new problem with the building and what are we going to do? How are we going to make this one work?
That's what I really want to know is when you say problem with the building, I feel like we're just one problem after another. So do you really hate us? You can talk about it. It wasn't right for me to say problem,
but it is always unique spaces. That's what makes it fun, too. I don't mean to downplay that too much.
So you do enjoy it a little bit?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
I think one of the crazy things is that when we go to start a restaurant, we are, you know, talking about the food, the menu, you know, the design, like the character, how it all is all going to come to life. But it truly has to mesh very early on with the work that you all do in setting up the space up to actually be able to execute all of that. And like when you, I assume it's like this with any kind of projects, restaurants or not, or do you find, are restaurants unique in that way? Because you also do office spaces and have to kind of bring a brand to life. Do you have those similar like brand building things as part of what you do?
I would say on a global portion, it is sort of the same thing. I think what's different on restaurants, and even you guys, there's kind of an elevated level of this, is you always come with an idea. A lot of places don't. I mean, they may have sort of a real general thing going on, but I think that there's a vision that comes out of you guys almost in the beginning. And I heard you say in the intro something about the existing buildings. I actually think that helps you guys
get
to that point, because you can look at these spaces and kind of imagine what you want them to be and what they can be. And so, you know, going back to the beginning on how the restaurants work, it's a little more complicated because there's always so many things in a restaurant. Just the systems, you mentioned HVAC, the kitchens, it's assembly space, the exiting, the life safety, all of the stuff.
And it's a public space, so you have to make it accessible to everybody too.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And you know, going into the older buildings, again, what you mentioned before, it's not, you know, they're not set up to be restaurants. That's true, but they're not set up to be that way when it comes to any of the systems that are in those spaces. The electrical, again, you mentioned HVAC, the plumbing's a big one. So, you know, it's a lot more to think about right out of the gate in the beginning.
So your business, like, what would you say the breakdown is between, so looking at just commercial, because I know you guys do residential and commercial, but looking at your commercial space, is it primarily restaurants that you're doing, or you do office space, restaurants, retail, the whole bit? You do everything.
The whole bit, yeah.
You do the whole bit.
Yeah. You know, I always think that restaurants are some of my favorites to do, because it's one of the few where there's so much value on kind of the brand or the look or the feel. It's not that everybody doesn't want that, but restaurants are, you guys are very tuned into this. Not, you know, not just you guys, any restaurateur does this. You know, and because there's a value to it, the projects tend to be a little bit, I'll call it more fun, more interesting, and on those senses, because how tuned in you are to it, it's, everything's about money. We always get that. But there's always more of a willingness to sort of go over the edge because you know the value, AKA money, on what that means to keep pushing what the places, spaces can be.
So I feel like sometimes when we come to you and we have, you know, the old buildings, we don't really have the concept fleshed out yet. Mm-hmm. And is that really the case, though, with a lot of other restaurateurs? I feel like they probably are coming to you and know exactly the cuisine that they're getting, instead of like, hey, Don, we just happen to move this building over here. What are we going to do with it now?
I think there's truth to that. It depends on, I mean, all clients are different, but you're right. Somebody that has, it doesn't necessarily mean a repeat, but they kind of have their brand very set. So what they're doing is they're molding their space to be their brand, where the difference would be that you guys a lot of times will start to mold the brand to fit the space. And that's a completely different thing. And other people do that. But for you guys, it's been way more particular on that, just by the types of buildings you guys are drawn to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the sense of space is a big part of what we're doing. And I think as with Leap or Wyatt especially, I think you've seen a lot of iterations of what the concept's going to be. And a lot of that is not just our whimsy, but we've had a lot more pressure on us with Leap or Wyatt of just building costs are getting so expensive. Mm-hmm. So then you have to hit a certain amount of revenue if you're going to spend that much money. And so we're constantly trying to, you know, be more efficient and figure out better uses for each, especially there, each floor. And, you know, and I think after you showed us how little square footage we had on each each floor, we definitely had to kind of reconfigure some things.
Yeah, that one in particular is, I think, is the most, it's the one that's been in the most flux of anything that we've worked on so far, only because every time we do an iteration, it's like, oh, wait, there's not that much room over here to do that. Or we have to, you know, revert something due to the idea that we need more seats, or, you know, we want to change the way that it feels a little bit, or, you know, we're really trying to put a kitchen into this basement that doesn't want that kitchen, you know. And then, of course, that one, even more so with kind of the historic aspect of that building. I mean, we've seen that in other ones, but this one in particular, it's trying to fit a whole bunch of things in a very small building. And it's in more ways than one, HTC and historic landmarks are also sort of bookending us a lot on what we would normally be able to do with those buildings as well.
So let's say I'm a brand new restaurant entrepreneur, and I want to open a new space. I come to you guys. What does the process look like from your side? Like, is it a team approach? How do you study the space? Does an individual take it on and try to come up with, you know, a first draft? Or how do you guys approach it within your firm?
I think that in some ways we do it a little differently than even other firms that I've worked for in the past. I tend to focus, and it seems a little bit opposite of what you would think, but I tend to focus a lot more on what's the utility of it is that you need. Because if you're not quite sure yet what your brand concept is going to be, you most likely have come to me with, this is what I, you know, the essence of this is the type of food, at least, that I want to, you know, put out there into the world. And that basically takes, you have a pretty good understanding of what you need for utility. What kind of equipment do I need in the kitchen? And a lot of clients are a little taken back when I start asking that. No, send me a list of the kitchen stuff. We just had an hour conversation about the concept. But all that aside, I want that first. And so then what we'll do, and again, I do think this is a little different than most people do it, is we'll start to look at it through that kind of utility aspect. And a lot of that really just has to do with trying to avoid, after years of doing this, trying to avoid the fact that we can really get you to the design, the concept, the feel, the space, but we want to know what those limitations are. And that helps us figure out what those limitations, and that's just a size thing as much as anything else.
Yeah. And I can, like, it's crazy because, yeah, thinking about that so early on, you think, oh, it's not that, I mean, of course it's a big deal, but it really matters when you go to open. Like, can you actually execute the plan that you had? Like, you want to put out breakfast tacos. Can you even make that happen? You don't know until you start from the very beginning of creating the infrastructure to be able to do that.
Right, right. And it, you know, it, and that changes completely too through the process of it. But if at least you know that, I know how much space you think you want for that, or usually it's how much little space you think it's going to take, and then I break your heart and tell you how much space it's actually going to take. And then from there, while we're setting that up, we're not just doing like a kitchen plan. We're not kitchen designers per se. We're taking your entire concept and we present you an entire plan. But our goal is that right from the beginning, it's a truthful plan and it's a well-designed plan, which is what we're having the most fun. Mm-hmm. But again, it's got all of the things that if you told me stop right here and move forward and let's do construction documents, I am 98% confident that I could do it with the plan that I just showed you. Mm-hmm. And I do think that's the difference of what, I think that answers your question, I hope.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, I think restaurant design is absolutely crazy. There's things that I feel like every time we do a project, I'm learning new things. It's always baffling to me how much space a bar takes up. You know, people walk in and they're like, oh, there's a long, skinny bar. Well, look at that bar. And that thing is like, it takes 10 feet. Is that about right? It's jutting out from a wall, right?
The skinniest bar you can do is about 8 feet, a few inches less. But from wall to the edge of the bar, you can maybe get to 7.5 if you're very creative, but that's how much space you need. And then when you have columns running in the space or some other item like that, or you're trying to put a banquette on the other side of the room, it, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, like people have no idea. But one of the things that I think we've learned from you, and I think is so cool, is you've moved us beyond thinking about spaces of just like touch points and visual cues that we think of. We think of wallpapers and what you're standing on and what pretty things we can put in. And you actually have taught us to control people's emotions based on the space that they're standing in. I think you taught us that with Supperland of compacting the entranceway as you walk in and having that feeling of compression. And then it just opens up and the fire's there and all that. And then at Leiluia Hall, the way you accentuated everything from the basement all the way up to the mezzanine and really just the way you affect people with the space, I think is really cool. And you can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I think that it all goes to, I mean, it comes from the design, but that design is always based, just like we were talking about restaurants, the experience of what it is. And that can come through, you know, at points when I enter. You were talking about the compression and then the opening. And clearly I talk with my hands too much. I keep hitting the microphone. But, you know, how am I seeing this from point A to point B, getting into the space, looking at the space from afar, sitting down in the seat? You know, what's the lighting like? What are my views like? How much am I being pushed to notice across the entire restaurant? Sometimes that comes through the kitchen. Sometimes it comes through the space, like you were talking about, the three levels. And sometimes it's really just about where does that work with the design to sometimes just change what, in your case, what the building is or was before. You know, before it, like to give it a new identity, to give it a new brand,
yeah.
kind of thing.
The process is so fun though, because I feel like we come to you with an idea, and you kind of put your touch on it to help it start come to life, and then it feels so much like we just keep molding it and shaping things as we go. And I think one of the key things is finding a partner like you, where neither side has walls up, like we're not doing it this way, staying open to seeing how the project can evolve and get better. And I think that's something where if you can, you know, trust the partner that you're working with to be able to do that. And I think that's one of the reasons why we've all worked really well together, is because we'll start going and we're like, oh, we hadn't thought about that. But then, hey, when you walk into Leiluia Hall and you can see from the basement all the way up into the roof and rafters, how beautiful that is and how impactful that is, when we hadn't seen that from the beginning, that didn't exist, you know? And I think constantly in the process of building out a restaurant, being willing and able to shift your mindset and evolve and adapt as you go. And I know your team has to do that too, because I'm sure you get stuck on some things where you're like, oh, I really want it to be this way, but I've never felt, you'll push back if you feel something strongly, but also it never feels like you're closed off to things. And I think that's a really important thing in that process.
Yeah, I think that has to happen on any project, but on the, you know, that type of collaboration is as much, you know, you guys will have an idea and then we'll sit down as a team away from you and start to try to figure out how to set that idea in motion. And then we'll start changing that idea. Mm-hmm. And knowing, you know, I we've been doing this for a while together. I mean, I know that I can come into a room again and say, here was the idea. Here's sort of where we're.
Are there any ideas that we've had that you thought were just going to be big fails and have turned out okay?
On or the spot, maybe I can't think of one right now. Well, I'll say that.
like pneumatic tubes or something, you know, crazy that someone's thinking of.
I think you guys tend to have some of the most creative, off the wall is not the right way to say it, but it's like different ideas that, you know, you're always pushing the envelope on this stuff, for example, pneumatic tubes or something like that. And then it becomes a fun challenge on our side to figure out how can we get this to work? And how does it actually work with what our vision and we think your vision is for the end product of this, right? Because sometimes you can throw something in and it just, you know, it's like, don't push it.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to take it too far and it's going to become sort of cliche or odd in the design.
I love some of the iterations of going back and forth where we're struggling you know, we're designing Supperland, and we want to get this big fire grill in, and then we all decide, hey, well, let's elevate it 7 inches and put it, you know, on this step up there so everybody can see it. And then you're like, oh, now we can fit the stairs going down.
That's right. Looks kitchen. Like the stairs are going to work, Jeff.
You're, like, wow, we came over that challenge.
That's right.
So it's lovely when those things come together. And then kind of a add on to my previous question, is there anything that you really think that we missed and should have done in one of our places that we either couldn't afford or didn't want to do?
Tough question. Yeah, that's a hard one.
You can be honest here. It's okay.
I mean, I think that there's in every project on this is clearly not unique to you. In every project, there are things that I'll back up and say one of the hard things about
is that we have budgets.
Budgets.
Your drawings don't have any budgets.
I think that sometimes people will throw out ideas, and I can't think of an example right now of like when we have had to do this, but sometimes being the designer on my side, I feel like I may be the only one who knows what it is you're letting go. Right.
Because it's not your project to finish. Right. Like you have to get the whole thing there. Like I'm actually thinking of something that you had designed some beautiful doors for the bathrooms at Leiluia Hall. And I loved them. I loved how they look. It was like the shape of the doors, like the way the carving was on the doors. And I just loved them. And they were much too expensive for us to actually put in the space. And that was something where, you know, budget-wise, we had to let go. And you probably, and I don't know that you did, but I know design-wise, I thought about, it'd be so much better. And to this day, I think it would be so much better if the doors looked like that.
I got tired, too. I couldn't make the doors. Sorry.
Yeah, so we had to order.
Ordering the doors got too expensive, right. and I was done in the wood shop. It was cold.
Yeah, so anyway, but that was a small instance of I saw the vision. I loved where it was going budget-wise and time-wise and effort-wise. We weren't in a place to take that on, so we had to accept something else. And
it's just a reality of how all this goes. You know, and sometimes it may be that if there's a concept that sort of gets pushed to the side that I've tried to push through it and, you know, I'm getting a lot of feedback. One would be cost. Two would be, you know, we're just not sure of it because we don't quite understand it. That means I'm not doing good enough on my side to relay what that is. But when it comes to cost, that's a different thing. I mean, money's money. You know, these things they're a business. And so, you know, you just have to sit down and kind of accept, okay, well, if we can't have that piece of it or we can't do it quite that way, what do we do to make sure that it doesn't look like it's missing something? Or how do we just take that and maybe turn it on its head a little bit and do it in a different way to where it still gets across what it is the whole concept was in the first place?
In general, just to lay this out there, however much you spend building out a restaurant, that restaurant has to do about 2x of that a mm-hmm. year in revenue. So if you spend $1 million on a place, you need to shoot for doing $2 million in revenue. So when we come to you and we're, you know, kind of working on a patio and we say, hey, this patio is going to cost $200,000. We need to make $400,000 from that patio per year. So that's just a general
revenue wise.
That's just a general rule of thumb to make back the cost of capital. Now, most small restaurant tours like us have a very high cost of capital. So that's where that numbers that way. Mm-hmm. People that have lower cost of capital, like big restaurant groups that can borrow money and have stock and things like that, they probably can ratchet that up a little bit higher. But in general, for those of us just kind of independent guys, that's where it's at.
I mean, it's just the way that it goes. I think as a far younger architect, that always hurt a little bit, but it's not that way any longer. I mean, to me, it's just about, like I said, turning it on its head and figure out what we can do to push it within the budget to which we have to be in. There's no, you know, maybe it'll work. Like we know it's not going to at this point. We have to change direction.
My whole thing is as the budget goes up, I'm just like, well, we're just going to you know, we're just going to create more revenue by adding this on.
The consummate optimist. That's how you are. I understand that. But
he sure is. And then it falls on me and our marketing team to make sure we have more people
we
in the door.
Just need another 100 people there a day. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, no problem. It's going to work out.
Well, what would you say, and you can talk about other projects, but I know sometimes, you know, you may not want to share from other projects, but with us here, biggest challenge that you feel like any of our spaces have been to work with, or one that's forthcoming? Is there certain challenges that you see are like the biggest ones for you guys to deal with?
On your particular project?
It's probably easiest to talk about ours because you don't have to throw anybody under a bus or anything.
That's a tough one. I know that things come at us, particularly during construction, that I think if I could say, you know, we were talking about the systems of some of these older buildings that we go into, and we love redoing these old buildings. I mean, I love working with you guys on these pieces, is all the things that are uncovered during construction. You know, it's remove that wall and nobody can figure out why the hell that thing's there at all. And, you know, a lot of times people look back at me like, you should have known that. And I'm like, nobody could have known that that was like that. And, you know, it's been sitting there for 100 years, getting redone by who knows what or why that happened. And I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges, and I'll bring it back a little bit to these kind of older buildings, is you just don't know until you know. And then that forces a lot of kind of regrouping. You know, we're trying to stay on timelines, and we all know how hard that is with these buildings too. And then I would say, to go back to that, one of the things that's the most difficult in the older buildings, and particularly in, I would say, Leluia and Leaper, is the HDC side of it. And that's that's not necessarily saying anything bad about HDC. It's just that there's a time frame.
That's the historic district commission.
Just slows everything down.
It just slows it down.
It makes us so we can't make any changes because we know that there's a huge time effect. Even if we think it's for the betterment of the project or the neighborhood or whatever, we're just stuck.
And they may think that too. It's just that there's a process that has to go through. So suddenly, you know, you uncover something pretty big and we have to try to change the building. You know, it can add 3 months to the project.
Oh,
and it's in construction.
Or a year.
Or 6 months or a year. We've learned that too.
I think our biggest challenge is yet to come. And I am super worried. At Leaper, we are kind of fortifying the building with these steel beams, and the steel beams go all the way from the basement up. So basement floor, ground floor, second floor, rooftop. So it's basically four floors of steel beam that somehow they have to lift over the building and get straight down with a crane. But then you also have to remember they're attaching in the basement, which we built as a foundation before the building was moved there. And then the building's been placed on top, and they did a pretty good job nailing the placement of the building, but there's spots where it's off by an inch or inch and a half. And so there's places where we're going to have to chisel out some brick and
work through
a lot of situations.
That's baffling to me in every project, is how you can lay out the plan, especially in these old buildings. Like, we still have to go in there. Every time he's like, I got to go actually do the measurements, you know, and he'll actually take the tape out and do the measurements for thing. And you can find, you know, oh, this is off 2 inches or this is off 2 inches. And I don't know if that's the building settling or things just not being exactly precise, but it is always in the build out process. We're like, oh my gosh, we're missing 2 inches here. And that 2 inches actually matters.
Yeah.
Happens all the time.
Particularly in this case where we moved a building on top of a new foundation and we're trying to then put steel inside of the building. And, you know, in that case, I think that what we learned in the end, because we made a perfectly squared foundation walls for this thing to sit on, and then suddenly they bring the building over and who knew it was 2 inches out of square. You know, it's a little bit of a trapezoid shape rather than its square shape. And we couldn't pick that up from what we were, you know, no matter how many times we sat there and pulled a string across it and tried to figure this thing out. And then when it comes to the steel pieces, that's a challenge. You mentioned one point, like helicopters or something.
I mean, that's the only way I can imagine it actually working is with a helicopter. I don't want to pay for that. He wants a helicopter.
I do too.
He wants to like be on. You both are like fun people. No, stay out of the clouds, gentlemen.
We've done a couple of projects where we've brought steel down through multi-story buildings. I don't think in the end it'll be as much of a challenge. I think that that part of the challenge will be how we have to modify the existing building to make sure we have a straight piece of steel. We're already kind of seeing that in some of our kitchen designs about we're worried if it has to move 2 inches one way or the other. And that little 2 inches is, it's amazing how much that affects what the original vision is, where these things can go, so on and so forth. I don't know that I answered your question, but it's a lot on that.
Yeah. It's worrisome.
Right.
So that's solarium too. So the Leeper Wyatt building, we've been talking about this project throughout this conversation, but this is a building that we physically moved from South Boulevard, 750 feet, right next to our other restaurant concept, Leluia Hall, and it sits on a foundation there now that we built, and then we're building a solarium on top. So it truly will be four stories. And that solarium piece is another one that feels like, I mean, is it built beforehand and then put on top, or is it, do we just construct it right there in place? Do we even know how that's going to work? Anyone?
Well, we have the plan for it, but the I think that has everything to do with the columns that Jeff just mentioned. Mm-hmm. And so what they're going to do is build the, basically get all of that new weight all the way through the basement to the ground. So essentially there'll be a skeleton sitting there for them to weld the new steel on top of that.
Oh, I see. Okay, yep.
So it should sequence itself out pretty well. There's just a lot of making sure that initial steel is correct.
And that steel, I would imagine, would help fortify the building and then, of course, be the weight disbursement for the solarium that's being built on top. Those two things.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. And that steel's helping completely with, I mean, in a lot of ways when it comes to the floors, I mean, we have all these new HVAC systems. We've got a trap door where we're going to be able to pull equipment back.
The trap door situation is something that it wakes me up at night. The idea of, in order for us to actually get the equipment to the second story open kitchen, we're going to have trap doors, which again, I think this is just like Jeff and maybe Dawn both wanting to live like the Goonies or something, or like do adventuresome things. Trap doors are necessary. We absolutely have to have them.
As we were going through the equipment plan, we're putting it's not wood fired anymore, but kind of a big stone pizza oven in, and it's about 5.5 foot radius. So we're thinking, well, it's not going to fit in the elevator. And yes, we could crane it in through the roof before we put the floor of the solarium in, but that's not going to work if we ever need to move a piece of equipment or trade out a piece of equipment. And in the basement, same problem. Like, how are we going to get these massive fryers? We're not going to have, you know, it's not going to be Jason, Bryce, and I carrying them down the stairs.
So the trap door is meant to remain a trap door, not a trap door, I guess.
Trap door is kind of a bad.
It sounds bad. Like we might drop people through them. But so the idea is that we'd be able to access floors, and they'd remain there as a door that can be opened through the floor.
Yeah, it's permanent, and there, if a piece of equipment ever breaks, if we get a big order in, can we just, you know, start using the winch and.
That's right. Get people up and down. In the end, the way that it's designed, it's not going to be like a feature. I mean, people won't even know that it's there. I mean, that's kind of the point of it. But, you know, it was just another layer of, okay, how do we solve this problem of equipment coming in and out? And, you know, in the future, because, you know, equipment's going to break and there'll be new equipment or new things on the menu. You need a new piece. We're going to have to be able to utilize something.
But it's crazy how you as an architect have to come into the build-out process itself, not just you're not just creating the drawings, you're creating some methods for us to actually be able to do the build-out. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Which I feel like that's kind of different. Like I had never thought about it that way.
Yeah, I think that's just solving challenges.
Problems.
And
like
just bringing those problems to Dawn and sitting down and trying to come up with a solution. I think the hardest thing we deal with, though, and the most annoying thing to me, as we've become experts now in glass insulation, is just the feedback from engineers. I don't ever feel like engineers really have a full grasp of the project and a full grasp of one's budget, and that they never come and say, hey, you know, if you take this one dump sink out, then your hot water heater is going to be half the size. You know, it's always just whatever you gave me is, they just do the calculations and then they say, hey, you need this hot water heater. And it's the same upstairs where they did the minimum insulation that the county requires for the glass on the solarium, and came up with just these ridiculous numbers for the amount of HVAC we had to have upstairs. And then as we investigated, because we were, you know, we couldn't even fit the ductwork, mm-hmm. was the problem. So we investigated it. We're like, well, actually, if we just put the correct amount of insulation on the glass and reflectivity, then we don't need half the HVAC upstairs. And they just don't bother to tell you these things until you ask.
Yeah, I think that some of that's just sort of the nature of an engineer and where that mindset falls. I mean, you can imagine they're engineers, and I can't remember if it's left or right brain. I never, you know, learned what that is. But, you know, that is probably their strength as much as it is what you're seeing as a weakness, because you see it on the other side of it. You know, you give them a set of information, and you say you need to make this work for X, Y, and Z. And they may not be trying to think outside of the box of how does this save me? If you don't do this, then this will save. So they do. I mean, that's not fair to say that they don't. But, you know, then it takes us, you, me, Jamie, whoever else, contractors involved in the project, to sit there and look at it and begin to question a little bit, well, why is this happening? And in that case, you know, we were in our time frames, we got all this information back so we could get things to permits or whatever. But we immediately all start questioning, why is there 50 tons of HVAC in a 1,200 square foot space? Well, that's where that questioning comes back to it. And I think that there's a safety factor, too. I mean, I think that, you know, engineers, they also take a lot of the brunt of if there's a problem. It's not always mm-hmm. their fault, right? So they're always trying to factor all that in to give you the best that they can give you and work the best that it can.
Yeah, there's a lot of liability there, yeah, right?
And it's tough on them. So when it comes to like the HVAC, well, they've also got me in the background going, this better be done tomorrow. We got to have this done. You know, like we are on our own deadlines. And so sometimes they may not have time to question that. When it comes to other things like structural, I mean, they are really trying to factor in as much as they can and take it as far as they can, usually to give you the safest thing that they can give you. And then there's that liability side where they're nervous to come back and take things down to where they're hovering over a line of it'll work, but boy, we would all feel a lot better if you just went mm-hmm. a little farther with that. And that's I think that's just tough for engineers in general.
And it's tough for me paying the bills.
You got to pay the bill. And I think that we tackle that in all of our projects as it comes back. I mean, usually you'll see it, we'll see it, and then, you know, sit down and have a conversation. What can we do about this next? Like, what is causing this? And, you know, I don't disagree that it could have been nicer to have the question in the beginning. But again, sometimes those timelines are, you know, you can hear me over here making some excuses, right? But sometimes it's like you're pushed in such a direction so fast. It's better to take it to that and then work backwards from there to try to work out those kinks.
Yeah, I feel like I'm much more new to this than you guys have really led the build outs for all these things. And I think the big thing that is constantly serving us well is asking questions, whether it's us asking questions to you, you asking questions. And for any new, you know, restaurateur who's out there or anybody working on build outs of any kind for their business is, don't assume the architect or the engineer or the construction person or anybody actually knows. There may be a better way if you just ask a question. And I think that's something, you know, if you're new at it, you might just accept the way that people have drawn it up or done it. But allowing space for those questions so that the project can get better and better is probably key.
I think that's super important. And one other tip, I think that Don and I, and I mean, you're in these conversations as well, but that we've really pushed you for is more redundancy in the things that will shut us down and stop us from operating. So I think we're trying to put two hot water heaters in every space, whether it's needed or not. Mm-hmm. So if one hot water heater goes down, we have a hot water heater and we can operate, because we've had too many times where it's Friday night and we lose hot water and you're closed for 3 days.
Yes, and for a restaurant, that's disastrous.
It's just incredible. So it was basically hot water heaters, pumps in the basement when we have to pump waste out of the basement. What other things? trying to, we put a generator in at Supperland for the hoods and a walk-in, which I think is nice. And what other redundancy do we have? There's one more
piece. Just thinking through those things that could
anything
shut you down.
Anything that can close you down and any, just relying on one part. So it's kind of, you know, for a while when we only had one hot water heater, we actually had a second hot water heater sitting at our maintenance shop. Not our main, but yeah, for parts. Right, so we bought a complete second one, and it's just sitting there, and they would just take the parts off and then order new parts.
Yeah, I mean, some of that stuff just comes from not only the redundancy to make sure that if you're, but a lot of it is just in general thinking of the future. Like, you know, these things are, you know, they're kind of like living beings, and they're going to change over time. They're going to have, the hot water heater is going to go down. One of the pumps may go down. So you try as much as you can. And this goes back to the questioning stuff, too, is that as much as we can, ask those questions, figure out, you know, try to foresee the future a little bit about what it can be. We may up the electrical knowing that you may have, you know, future additions, the gas sizes, the, you know, all those kind of utility things, which kind of go into what you're speaking
to. It doesn't cost that much more when you're doing the construction the first time to make your gas pipe a half inch bigger or to bring in a few more amps or, you know, whatever it is. But it does cost a lot of money later if you've gone over and you have to replace everything.
But sometimes that's what you're forced into as well. I mean, it is an extra cost to try to get all this redundancy and do all these things. You know, in some clients, like these brand new startups, they just can't do it yet. And so they got to sort of get in and get the engines running before they probably have enough to, you know, back up and say, okay, this is what we're going to do different. This is what we're going to add. Make sure, you know, the safety nets that go through it too.
Yep, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for all of your time, your insights, and honestly, your ongoing partnership as well. We truly could not do what we do without you.
Peden,
thank
Finan.
You guys. It's
Tony Dandel, architecture. I'm still going
PFT.
For it.
PFT.
Well, that was great to have Don on here.
He's so fun.
He is so fun, and he really is such a big part of what we do. And I don't feel like we would have the success of building out things without him and his team.
No. We would not. He definitely pushes us to new places. He questions what we want to do. He comes up with new ideas for us. It's a great process. I love working
with him. And I think with architecture, I always thought like, oh, the architect's the person who designs the space, but like just in terms of like the layout and measurements and stuff. But he a lot of times will bring design ideas. He will help select lighting with us. You know, I think there's a lot of, you know, even like surfaces, he'll have suggestions that help with that. And he's with us the whole way. I think when we first started out, I thought of as an architect, do the drawings and then they're done. But he really like walks along with us. And I don't know if it's like that with every architect, if that's just the way architecture works. I didn't realize it or what, you know what I mean?
There were a few pieces at Leilua Hall that got too complicated for me, especially to do the woodworking on. And I was like, Don, I need you to help draw this out so that I can 3D model it and get it, you know, put into our, you know, our system and get printed out. So he was awesome there and could create molding on the fly or whatever we needed to match up with what was there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, if for anybody who's new out there, just know that partnership, that piece of it is so key. And I think my biggest aha moment, and it came towards the end, we've already really talked about it, but the idea of asking questions and just really do not assume that everybody in the room is right or that they know it. Just ask questions.
Especially to the engineers.
Ask it to the engineers. Ask it to everybody. And be willing to relook at things in a different way. You know, there could be something that, hey, if you change this slightly, it could synchronously help you in another direction, like you talked about at Supperland.
For sure. Well, that was really fun.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you all for joining us. Remember to like, subscribe, share, and we'll catch you on the next one.